And I am joined this morning, happily so, with Julie Weisenhorn from the University of Minnesota. Well, she's you were always going to be connected to the University
forever.
Of Minnesota.
Forever. I forever. Hope so. It's
Julie, it's good to see you yesterday, and Laura and Mary. Excuse me. We had lunch today at the Arb, or yesterday at the Arb. And I tell you what, I've been to the Arboretum many times. It was busy.
Yeah, well, you know, all the tulips are blooming, as well as the other bulbs that are planted around the area. So it is a good time to go out and visit. And today would be a terrific day to be out there because it's gorgeous, it's cool. You can walk and walk and walk and see so much blooming out there.
Yeah, absolutely. And for those that are regular listeners, and we have many, as you know, Julie, know that you have been retired. But you, to me, you're probably busier than ever, it seems like.
Yeah, I'm still volunteering. In fact, I when I was working as an extension educator, I air quotes here, retired as a master gardener. I was a volunteer for Hennepin County, and same as Teresa is, and was working as an extension educator and then came back out of retirement as a master gardener when I retired as an extension educator. So I just flipped the tables a little bit, and I've been volunteering out at the Foodscape, which is up at the farm at the Arb, with Laura and a lot of other great master gardeners too, and John, those are our two extension educators, and then also volunteering with the Wayzata Train Garden, and we were talking about this yesterday.
So yeah, what's that about now?
Well, this is a raised bed garden. It's next to the depot, the Vintage Depot in Wayzata, downtown Wayzata. It is a very cool G-scale train layout, and I have had the great fortune to meet up with the gentlemen and who run this train garden, and they wanted some help with landscaping. So I've been doing miniature pruning and working on little tiny landscapes, and as well as great big landscapes. And in fact, today and tomorrow, they'll be running the train for the first time here in 2026. So if you're in Wayzata or driving through, you know, pull up and walk over there and see that train garden. It's right along Lake Street, or the main street of that runs along the lake and by the big walkway. So that's been really, really fun. So, and the depot was really cool to see, too. A lot of history there about the lake area and the trains.
I've been there for a long time. Should stop by today.
It's pretty neat.
And a good day for it. Going. Well, as usual, Julie, we're going to keep you busy this hour because I see a ton of texts already.
Excellent.
And phone calls as well. I'll tell you what, let's do this. Todd and Ramsey is checking in via the telephone. Let's do that. Todd, thank you. What is your question for Julie this morning?
Thanks for taking the call. Love the show. About seven or 8 years ago, we created a patio outside, and it's just a little bit above ground level. So to create a natural barrier or wall or screen, I planted some perennial grass. I wish I could remember which variety it was, but it's kind of like one of the most common perennial grasses. I see it often in commercial settings around the state. Grows in a tight bundle, very tall, with just a small head of seed at the top. But it's been great for years. But the last 2 years, imagine the round bundle of grass. The very center of it has become dead. It still flourishes on the perimeter, like kind of like a dartboard, with the bullseye being dead and the perimeter being live grass. It's each and every bundle.
I am so glad you asked this question, Todd, because this is a good time of year to divide grasses. And what you're seeing is the center of that bundle, as you said. This is probably Carl Forrester feather reed grass. It sounds pretty much like that cultivar. And it's a very straight, very well-behaved grass in the landscape. It clumps versus sending out rhizomes through, you know, and spreading like a colony. So it's a really nice, easy to work with grass in your landscape. But what you're seeing is that dead part is the old part of the plant. And plants do have a life cycle and they do die out. And when you see that in the center of plants like ornamental grasses or hosta or Siberian iris, then it's time to divide those plants. And all you need to do is you can dig up that whole plant, dig up the plant, and then just section off those live pieces and replant them and compost the center and just get rid of it. So you can, you'll have a great deal of grass. You may want to give some away to people or put it somewhere else in your yard for some good repetition to create unity within your landscape. But that's what you're seeing. So I'm glad that it's been performing really well. And that 7 to 8 years is probably about the right time frame as well.
Very good. Thank you for the call. Texter wants to know, is now a good time to buy and plant new perennials, and how much do I need to water them to get them established?
It is a great time to buy and plant new perennials, and we have a lot of wonderful nurseries and garden centers around Minnesota. We're really fortunate in Minnesota to have an excellent green industry. When you plant them, then you do want to water them in, and that does a couple things. So there's some transplant shock that happens when you move a plant from a container where it's been living in a cozy environment in the greenhouse into your garden bed, into new soil and conditions. And so you want to water it to reduce that potential for the transplant, make it easier on the plant, basically, to reestablish in that location. The other thing that watering does is it helps to fill in the air gaps and collect that soil back in to fill those air gaps around the plant. You do want an airy, light soil for plants so that the roots can grow easily, but that watering helps settle that soil. And I would look at those plants every few days, you know, rain depending, and be sure to give them some more water if they happen to be drying out.
Very good. I noticed on the forecast, Julie, not a whole lot of rain, maybe a little bit tonight, but not much mentioned this this coming week. But at least no frost for the Twin Cities. Grab another phone call. Nancy checking in from Edina this morning. Hi, Nancy. Good morning.
Hi, Danny, and hi, everybody. I see on the news you have 40,000 tulips blooming right now, and I'm on a tour to come out there on May 12th. What would be left in bloom? We're not coming till May 12th.
Well, let's see. Today's May 2nd, and so you've got 10 days. They do plant tulips so that they bloom in rotation. So there are some that are blooming earlier than others, and it's for that purpose. It's to extend that bloom as much as you can. Other things that will be blooming, for example, are the lilac collection. They're starting to show their flowers, and they'll be blooming at that point. There'll also be a lot of other ornamental shrubs like ninebark, and the azaleas will probably be blooming by then. They are fantastic. They're out on 3 Mile Drive as well as kind of sprinkled around the arboretum. But a great part of the tour would be taking the trumpet creeper or driving the 3 Mile Drive and taking a moment to walk through that that azalea collection. It's absolutely mind-boggling. And I really hope, actually, that this cool weather continues because it helps to sustain and prolong those blooms. They don't get so heated from the sun. And, you know, if we have early heat of 80-degree days and, you know, we kind of have that short spring that we do sometimes. But when we have these longer, cooler temperatures, those flowers are brighter, they last longer, and same with those other ornamental shrubs. But so the azaleas would be a terrific place to stop on May 12th.
When I was out there yesterday, I know we have to break here momentarily. What is that little kind of a train, these little cars that the people are, you know, climbing aboard? Where does that go?
Well, that's a great, I'm glad you mentioned that, Denny. That's called the Beeline. And the Beeline are little six-person red vehicles, and they will drop you off at different stops along the way. And I know that the maze, which is next to the azaleas, is one of the stops. So that would be a really easy way to get out there if you don't want to drive your car.
Yeah, that's great. And that drive is fun. All right, beautiful. Let's do this. Let's take a break. We have quite a few more questions to get answered here on this
great
Saturday. Our phone number is also our text number, 651-461-9226. From News Talk 830 WCCO. Good Saturday morning to you for just joining us. Julie Weisenhorn from the U of M, and answering any kind of a lawn or garden question you can throw at her this morning, and we have a bunch of them. You know, Julie, I'm going to get back to the text screen in a moment, but one final comment about the Arboretum plant sale. Tell me about that.
Yeah, so the plant sale is coming up. It is going to be held on, let me just find the date. It is coming up on May 8th and 9th, so next weekend. There are free tickets available for the plant sale. And we need tickets because otherwise everyone would come at 8 o'clock in the morning and it would be an absolute crazy zoo. So this helps to kind of, you know, keep the crowds coming, but and then allow
spread
our staff to, yes, to spread it out and allow our staff to get plants back out there as they get picked over. But yeah, definitely. It's a free ticket and you can just come on in and you do need to pay the general admission or if you're a member, of course, you get in for free. So yeah, May 8th and 9th, check out the tickets. You can find those at arb.umn.edu.
That sounds like something I'd like to do. All right. Mm-hmm. Can an old asparagus patch be restored to small and tender stalks?
Oh, boy. Well, asparagus are deeply rooted plants, and we usually would plant what are called two-year roots. And after the third year of growth is when you can start to harvest them. So if this is an old patch, what I would probably recommend is first checking out our asparagus page on extension.umn.edu and go to Yard and Garden. Under vegetables, A to Z, you can find the information on asparagus there. I believe you would end up probably digging up those old roots and maybe checking out which ones are still living, which ones are not, and then adding probably some new roots in there to rejuvenate that patch. But check out that webpage. It should give you all the information you need.
Okay. Texter says, can I effectively transplant my autumn joy sedum now?
Yes, this is actually a good time to plant that because that plant is small and compact as it's starting to emerge. It's a really easy way to manage that plant, and then it has the entire season coming up to get reestablished and grow well in its new location.
Here's a lawn question for you, Julie. Texter says, we have large areas of our lawn that show grub damage. What do we do? What kind of damage can grubs do?
Well, grubs will eat the roots of plants, of the grass plants, and therefore kill the upper part, and you'll see these big patches of it. And you want to be sure that you have grub damage, and you want to look at that because and see if you can pull up that dead grass. If it comes up like a big mat, you'll see that the roots have been basically cut off by the feeding grubs. You want to determine why you have grubs, first of all, and see if you can find the grubs in that grass area. And if that's the case, then you want to be sure that you're doing, you're managing your lawn properly to minimize the grubs. Grubs are basically the small larvae of other insects like June bugs and Japanese beetles, and they are in lawns that are very that are usually irrigated significantly, so it's a moist condition for those grubs. So check that out first that you have grubs. If you don't find any grubs, then chances are there might be something else going on with your lawn. And that might maybe a disease issue. It might be just that grass is an annual grass and it died out. So a number of different ideas and reasons for that. But if you do have grub issues, you can treat those grubs. And that usually happens actually around the middle of the summer. And that is when the new grubs have emerged. Right now, the grubs are so big, it's going to be difficult to manage them. But you will want to reseed that area, and you can use you want to choose a turf grass that's going to be appropriate for your site, for sun, soil type, etc. And we do have a good page on choosing grass seed for Minnesota lawns, and that's under our lawn section on extension.umn.edu.
Extension.umn.edu. Check it out.
Yes.
Texter wants to know, are you and the Abiders playing soon?
Oh, God bless them. Yeah, so we are. We have two gigs in May coming up. We have one at Everly Farms, which is a vineyard orchard on County Road 26, just north of Mound. And it is the old Minnetonka orchard, if you're familiar with that. And we will be playing on Wednesday night, May 20th, from 5 to 9. And down at their wine and pizza area. So it's a really great gig down there. It's a lot of fun. The staff are terrific. And the pizza's phenomenal. It's wood-fired pizza. We also are playing at the May Markets at the Arboretum. And the May Markets are a great opportunity for people to meet and purchase from Minnesota vendors. Great everything from art pieces to jewelry to clothing to really wonderful sculptures. And we will be playing there on May 24th from 11:30 to 3.
Having a lot of fun as usual.
More information on arboretum.umn.edu.
Excellent. Julie, hang on. I tell you, let me ask you this one more before we go to weather. This texture has hostas that have a brown, hard, textured circle the size of a dinner plate in the middle of the plant. Around the outside, the circle, it is very nice green leaves. Why did this happen? Will it get better?
This is the same as the grass question we had earlier. That's the older part of the plant that has died out, and the newer part of the plant is that ring of green leaves around it. So it's time now to divide that hosta. And you can do that by digging up the entire plant, cutting out or pulling apart those green plants, and then you can compost the center. It's dead. Nothing's going to happen. And then replant those smaller sections in other areas or give them away to friends or whatever you want to do with them. So, yeah, okay. Another good example of time to divide.
Oh, let's do one more before weather.
Would
you please describe the effective way to remove small buckthorn plants? I've discovered four that are less than 2 feet tall.
So you can do a couple things. You can cut them down and then treat them, and you can treat the stumps with an herbicide. It's usually called like brush killer. It combines glyphosate and triclopyr together, I believe, and you can do that. You can also dig them out, and if they're really small, like little seedlings that you see coming up, they actually pull up pretty easily. And you want to do that because these are perennial plants. If you cut those seedlings, they're going to come back. So you want to pull them out as much as you can.
All right. Hang on, Julie. We'll take a break for weather. Be right back with more of our Smart Garden Show here on News Talk 830. This is WCCO. Stay with us. Welcome back to our Smart Garden Show. Denny Long here, along with Julie Weisenhorn, answering those lawn and garden questions by phone and by text. And as usual, Julie, we have a bunch of both. Let's get to it. Jerry in St. Paul is first up on the phone here. Jerry, thanks for waiting. What is your question, please?
Yeah, hi, Julie and Denny. Julie, my backyard is all bumpy. I mean, it's like every 6 inches it's bumpy, and I'm just wondering what I can do to remedy that.
Well, I think it's finding out first why it's bumpy, if it's bumpy because of voles or moles, or if it's bumpy because of tree roots maybe that are growing under your grass. If it's voles or moles, you can sometimes rake those bumps down, and they'll kind of collapse, or basically the tunnels that the animal has created under your turf. And if they're tree roots, unfortunately, that's something you have to kind of live with. I know a lot of people have silver maples in their yard, which are wonderful native trees, but they put out substantial roots, and they can be bumpy at that point. In some cases, if that's the case, it may be not a good place to grow grass. It might be a better place to put mulch down and plant some shade perennials. So it's finding out, first of all, what the issue is, and if it is the animals, then you can rake those mounds down or those kind of walk on them, stomp them down. Some people will rent a roller and roll their lawns as well. So those are a couple of ideas for you.
Okay. Thanks, Jerry. Nikki, phoning in from Minnetonka this morning. Nikki, you're on CCO with Julie.
Hello there. A few years back, we had a patch of grass in the back that wouldn't grow grass. So I had a AstroTurf put in for a putting green for my husband.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And great. Everything's great. The grandkids love it. But now it's there's moss growing in it.
Oh.
How do I get frustrating the grandkids because it's messing up their putts.
Oh, but, sure. So
yeah,
moss
how
hazard.
Get rid of the moss on the AstroTurf.
So moss will appear when there's a lot of moisture. So you may have some dips in that AstroTurf that are collecting water or retaining water underneath the AstroTurf, and that may be causing the moss to grow on top of it. It may be too shady also, so you might look up and see, are there any branches in the trees that are shading the area to that I could prune away to get a little more sun on there. It's essentially a wet AstroTurf in those spots, and that's the spores will come and grow onto that area. So You can rake it off, you know, gently, so you don't want to tear the AstroTurf, but you can scrape it or rake it off. You probably have already tried that. But that's the reason for it. So you want to look around and think, like, why is there a plant that really likes damp locations growing on here? The other thing, too, is you may have soil that's collecting on the AstroTurf, and you may want to clean the AstroTurf. You can vacuum it off with a shop vac when it's dry. You could also treat the AstroTurf with, like, a bleach, a 10% bleach solution, and try to kind of clean off or kill off any kind of fungus or anything that's grown on there as well, any kind of organic matter.
All right, very good.
Never had that question before.
All right. Thank you for the call. Texter says this, Julie, I have a 15-year-old Underwood plum tree. Last year produced hundreds of plums, all with worms. What can I apply safely to the tree to kill the worms? The tree now is in full flowering mode, so I have to act quickly.
With worms in the plums, those are, let's see, I'm going to say plum curculio. That's an insect that lays its egg in the plums. That is a good question, and I would probably take a look at our website on plums, and that is going to be under the fruit section at extension.umn.edu. And check that out. It's actually called it's called stone fruits, and it includes peaches and cherries and plums. And take a look at that and see if you can determine what it was, if you see a picture or if you see some other issue too. If you can't find something, you can certainly contact our Ask a Master Gardener helpline, which is also on our Extension Yard and Garden page, and talk to them about it. There may be people who are more knowledgeable about plums than I am. But I think I'm not sure what you would do to prevent it. And it may be just the year that you had, that population was particularly bad.
Okay. All right. Good luck. This listener wants to move some Asiatic lilies to a new spot a few feet away from their current location. They're up to about 6 inches tall at the moment. Is it okay to move them now, or should I wait until fall? Zone 4 they're in.
You could move them now, and you want to dig them very deeply, so you be sure to get all of the bulb and all of the roots that are coming off the bulb, and then move them like in a big clump and have your hole ready to put them in where you want to put them.
We've had this question before. Can we cut down the perennial stems that we left over winter for the bees and insects to live in yet and still have those things safe?
You can cut them down. We usually recommend leaving them at about 8 to 12 inches tall. And if they tend to fall down or easily pull out, you can collect those. And I usually tuck mine behind the garden somewhere where if there are bees that have used them for nesting, you're not harming them at all. I wouldn't throw them into your fire pit or anything like that, but just tuck them back out of the way, and then the bees can find them, or if there are still bees nesting in them, they can use them there. But yes, you can go ahead and cut some of that down now. And all as right. The plant grows up, it will actually hide the old stems too.
When is the best time to plant tulips and daffodils?
That would be in the fall. So you want to wait until around September or early October and plant your bulbs at that time.
All right. Kind of doing a lightning round in a way. All right. Is it too early to fertilize my lawn? I have not mowed yet.
If your lawn is actively growing and if the temperatures are correct, we've had some pretty chilly temperatures recently, you can go ahead and do a fertilizer application at this point. Be sure to read the bag and apply it appropriately. And any kind of general lawn fertilizer products need to be watered in with about half an inch of rain or irrigation water.
Okay. Can you transplant peonies now?
Peonies are usually transplanted in around August. So you want to let them bloom through and grow through the summer, and then in the August do your transplanting at that point. Remember that with peonies, you want to plant them at the same depth that they are, and you have to be a little bit patient because it may take a year or two for those plants to get reestablished in their new location and bloom. So they may not bloom the year after you transplant them. Sometimes we get lucky, but you just got to be patient with them. The depth of those peonies is really important. We have an excellent video on our website about peonies that was done by Dr. Brandon Miller, and he shows how to plant bare root peonies. So that would be a good video to take a look at. He talks a lot about the depth and appropriate planting methods for those plants.
Very good. My mother, texter says, has a lot of ferns around the perimeter of her yard. She would like them to be fuller. Is there a way to encourage their spreading without having to dig them up and split them?
Not really. They just have to mature. They just have to get to their mature size. She might want to add some more ferns to it. There's a lot of great ferns, and you can mix ferns together. So you might want to do that. But if she wants them to be fuller, it's just kind of, you just kind of have to wait until they get large enough to be fuller.
I know you've been waiting for this one. Creeping Charlie is ruining my yard. Help me.
Oh,
that's kind
goodness.
Of a fall time, isn't it?
It is a fall time, yeah. So Creeping Charlie is best dealt with in the fall. And we have an excellent webpage on Creeping Charlie, so I'm going to kind of guide you toward that. It's in under our lawn section on Yard and Garden at extension.umn.edu. And it gives you lots of good information about how it grows, why it's a problem, and then how to manage it.
All right, very good. Tell you what, let's do. I'm getting a bit of a signal here. Let's take a break and be right back on the other side. We still have texters to get answers for here on this Saturday on our Smart Garden Show from News Talk 830 WCCO. And we're back with more Smart Garden Show. Denny Long along with Julie Wisenhorn from the U of M answering those very questions by phone and by text. And speaking of phones, Jimmy phoning in from Big Lake this morning. Morning, Jimmy. What is your question for Julie?
Good morning. Thank you for your time. I am in Big Lake trying to start a yard in the sandy soil that I have up here. I did my final grade, leveled everything out, put seed down last year, and it took right away very well. I do not have irrigation. I'm just watering above ground. And then I kept watering, and it basically a lot of rye, a lot of fescues, things that are more drought tolerant, and then they did have some Kentucky blues in there. And now this year I overseeded before the winter, and then now it's just, it's not taking, it's not doing anything. So
what's going on?
Do I fertilize at this point, or what can I, do I need to bring in tons of dirt to try and make a yard?
Well, I think that, I'm wondering what your mix was last year, if you had a lot of annual ryegrass, which would have been a kind of a bluish color to it, and it would have grown really quickly. If that was the case, then it's not going to come back this year. It's an annual plant. So usually it's kind of like a nurse crop, meaning that it grows quickly so that it fills in, while the perennial grasses – like the fescues and the Kentucky bluegrass, are getting established. I think that the sandy soil is difficult, and it sounds like you've been watering pretty religiously. That may be the case now, is that you need to start watering again. If you find big areas of it that are not growing, you may need to reseed again this spring and overseed. Also might be the case where you want to bring in a lawn care company and just have somebody consult on it and see if they can help you with that as well. But probably, I would say probably reseeding again. I don't think you need to bring in a lot of soil, though you didn't mention if you did bring in soil when you established it first. If you established it right into the sand, it's going to be more difficult for that plant. You may have to top dress it with some good topsoil. And that might be an option. And then mix that in, you know, put your seed down again on that. So I'm sorry I don't have a better explanation for you, but I wish John was on. He could help us out maybe a little bit. But I would say probably looking at the kind of soil that you have, it's sandy, you might want to bring in topsoil, put down about a quarter inch, and then you may have to reseed in certain areas and keep watering, definitely, because we haven't had much water down here. I don't know about up in Big Lake, but that sandy soil is going to really, that's water's not going to absorb very much into that sandy soil.
Well, that's a good point. Well, good luck with that. I was looking at a text. My iris rhizomes are showing on top of the ground. Can I cover them with soil or just leave them alone?
No, you leave them alone. That's a natural growth occurrence for rhizomes, for those iris rhizomes. Just leave them alone. It actually helps them to produce new buds and to grow better.
This listener is a lawn question. Actually, it's about to quack grass. How far and how quickly does that spread? It spread from our neighbor's yard, and I would like to keep a buffer between it and our native plants and others in our yard. Do you think solarizing it with plastic or cardboard would work to get rid of it?
Yeah, quackgrass is the toughest lawn weed that we have. It's a perennial. It grows. You can identify it because it grows faster than the grass does after other grasses after you mow it. It kind of pops up like in clumps. It has a very complex root system, which makes it spread, as you found out. You can solarize it. You can try to do that. It's really difficult. It often has to be treated, and treated probably several times to really get rid of it. And as far as a barrier goes between your lawn and your neighbor's, probably something like a good couple feet of mulch in an area. I don't know what your yard looks like. I don't know if you have a fence or anything between your yards. But something that will keep that quackgrass as much as possible where you can at least get to it before it gets into your lawn. So creating a mulched planted area, planted densely with perennials, or just keep it open so that you can kind of address that perennial rye or that quackgrass as quickly as possible. Ideas there for you.
One more call, I think. Catherine calling in from Blaine this morning. Catherine, you're on CCO. Good morning.
Good morning, Danny. Good morning, Julie. Yeah, I have a question and this is maybe out of context completely, but I have to go out in my garden. I have to go out in my garden. I'm afraid of those darn wood ticks. What do you say that I should do before I go out there? What should I wear? Should I put bug spray on?
So there's excellent guidelines from the DNR on managing ticks, and there are a number of really good repellents. And I actually read a great article in Consumer Reports where they tested DEET products, lemon and eucalyptus oil products, aerosol versus pump, wipes, all of those things. And it was a very interesting article. It also isolated or identified different diseases that ticks can carry. You do want to wear long pants. You want to tuck your pants into your boots or into your socks if you're wearing, say, tennis shoes. And then you do want to do a good tick check afterwards. Have somebody look you over if you know your back and whatnot. And probably take a shower and wash your clothes after you're done. So it's good that you're being really aware of ticks because they can carry some diseases that you really don't want to have. And and then trying and looking up some of those DEET products. DEET, D-E-E-T, is a pesticide that's in a lot of products. And then also there are a few others like Picardin out there. That's another pretty good product as well. So, but look to the DNR. They have good information on their website about that.
And we have about a minute to go, Julie. I saw a video the other day of someone suggesting when you go out in the woods, wherever, and mm-hmm. wear, like you said, long pants, but bring a lint roller with you.
And you
can kind of go through your pants and your socks. And I thought, because some of those are really, those black ones that are very tiny.
Right.
All right. I want to leave on this note. And don't forget to get to the website, extension.umn.edu. This texture says, I called Julie a couple of years ago about a Honeycrisp apple tree that would not blossom, and she suggested that I graft on a new piece from another tree, which I did, and I just wanted to thank her because last year, that was 3 years ago, and last year that apple tree produced 50 apples. Thank you very much. How about that?
Well, I'm glad to hear that, but I don't remember that.
I don't either. We talked to a few people since then.
I'm glad they're getting apples. That's good.
Well, Julie, I know you're going to be back with me on the 30th, right?
Yes.
In the meantime, when can we see the abiders?
May 20th out at Everly Farms in Minnetrista, and then at the Arboretum May Markets on May 24th.
Excellent. Well, have a good week, and we'll talk to you in a couple weeks or so. Huh?
That sounds good. Thanks, Denny.
All right. Thanks, Julie. Julie Weisenhorn from the U of M.